You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 6th of July 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Steve Bloomfield. Coming up on today's programme. Thousands of Greek no voters gathered last night in Syntagma Square in central Athens to celebrate the outcome of Sunday's referendum. With the vote, Greece has rejected creditors' demands for tax hikes and pension cuts. But how will Europe react? And how much room is there still for negotiations?
The ball is in Athens' court, as far as we're concerned. When Tsipras is prepared to present a substantial proposal, Europe will be ready to talk. But now it's very important to get an aid package for Greece. The Greek people need our help, and we can't deny them.
In this special edition of Midori House, together with my guests Daniela Peled and Roger Boys, we take an in-depth look at Greece and the unfolding crisis, and of course, what happens next after its people have been heard. That's all to come here on Midori House with me, Steve Bloomfield. So welcome to Midori House. My guests today are Daniela Peled and Roger Boys. Daniela Peled is the editor at the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. Roger Boys is the diplomatic editor of The Times. Welcome to you both. Yesterday, more than 60% of voters in Greece's referendum rejected the terms of the country's repayment plan to Europe. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras insists this is not a no for Europe, but rather a vote against more austerity. Germany, on the other hand, has criticised the move, saying it will deepen the gap between Greece and the other European nations. Eurozone finance ministers are due to meet tomorrow and hold a full summit with Eurozone leaders, where Prime Minister Tsipras is expected to present fresh proposals to the group. Roger Boys, over the last 24 hours, we've had a number of sort of quite strong statements from various people involved in this process, from Yanis Varoufakis, who was, until this morning anyway, Greek finance minister, to Sigmar Gabriel in Germany, which has seemed to suggest that everyone is sticking vehemently to their positions. In the past few hours, have you detected any changes, any sort of more emollient messages coming out?
Yes, I think there is something up. The obviously prearranged resignation of the finance minister is part of it, since he's regarded by the creditors as a polarizing figure, and in fact, only a couple of days ago described the creditors as terrorists. So that's one step. The other is Tsipras has talked to the leaders of the other parties. And most importantly of all, Samaras, who basically spearheaded the Yes campaign. And there does seem to be, not exactly a unity government, but there does seem to be something going on there, some kind of agreed negotiating position. The Greek negotiating team in Brussels has changed. And Schäuble, for all his hardlineness, has said, and maybe said a little bit too early, that there will be a continuing need after the referendum to financially support Greece. Not in the way that's being requested or demanded by Greece, but nevertheless, there are all these little signals suggesting that once we're through this week, something may well happen. But we have to see. We have to see what emerges tomorrow.
And Daniela Peled, throughout this all, and as much as Greeks were, or many Greeks were celebrating last night, we're still in a perilous situation in Greece itself. The banks are going to be closed. We're just hearing now for another 2 days. There are fears that they're going to run out of money, of actual money to take out of an ATM and spend. It gives this crisis a sense of, this deadline really does count, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think it's beyond simple and pure economics. I think it's had an incredibly divisive effect within Greece. I was talking to a Greek friend today who was supported the yes vote, and he was saying, almost only semi-jokingly, don't quote me on this, I don't want my family to be menaced. He feels this definite sense that they've already been called traitors, people who supported the yes vote. And it's a very frightening time in terms of relations within Greece. You know, there are already semi-veiled threats that the army is going to keep an eye on things. So from that point of view, that's only added to the tensions and the very real fear. I think the banks are going to be closed all week, which is terrifying.
Roger, do you get the impression that there is willingness to compromise from the rest of Europe now, that for all the language yesterday and in the run-up to this referendum, that, well, if you vote no, then, you know, you're essentially leaving the euro, that they realise it would damage the euro so much if Greece were to leave now, that they should compromise to a certain extent?
Well, yes, I think... you know, it might be that's what the brain is saying. The brain is saying we can't afford this fundamental weakening on the margins of the euro. But the reality is that there are so many complex levels of resentment against Greece. In fact, the only thing in this whole crisis, which it seems to me has been quite badly mismanaged by Merkel, really, but the only thing she did achieve was to get a kind of common ground between Ireland, which, for example, which is resentful that, you know, that it made so many sacrifices and is now, you know, supposed to contribute to a bailout. A country like Slovakia, which is poorer than Greece and is supposed to be drummed up for a bailout. The whole of northern Europe, which continues to think of the whole of southern Europe as being profligate, and countries like Spain, which really have done an awful lot of work to try and recover growth and quite successful.
Well, that might be good politics, but the idea of, you know, pulling together various people who feel resentment surely isn't good for, you know, for the state of Europe, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, the function was, it's good politics only in the sense that it totally isolated Greece. It was, and remains, 18 versus 1. So, by saying that, I was trying to highlight that actually a deal is going to be extremely complex. No, not at all. I think Europe is pulling itself apart. You know, it's not like the Eurozone crisis is the only crisis that Europe faces. You know, there's a massive migration wave. There's a country on the borders of the European Union that is basically at war with Russia. If ever there was a continent in distress, it's here. But that in turn may lead to some more conciliatory moves. We don't know. There's a lot of internal dynamics in all of these countries too. So Schäuble, the German finance minister, plainly has a slightly different view than Merkel, who has inherited this mantle from Helmut Kohl, which who basically brought in the euro, claiming that it was the price for a unified Germany, a unified Europe through the euro, was the price that Germans had to pay. And of course, the Germans were furious about this. They didn't want to give up their German mark. And the only way he could really talk the Germans into it was to say, well, the euro is a matter of war and peace. I remember exactly when he said that, because that's the only thing that trumped German fears of hyperinflation and abandoning the Deutsche Mark. So, and it's this that still, that's the legacy. That's the legacy that haunts Merkel now. Merkel, who was the protege of Helmut Kohl, is now faced with this dilemma that she might be at the helm when the euro falls apart. And it's a massive burden, but it's also a massive responsibility. If you've seen pictures of her today, her body language says everything. She's like she's been beaten up for 3 days in a row.
Daniela Peled, a lot has been written recently about the Eurozone project and how actually the Eurozone itself, the Euro itself, may be the thing that pulls the European Union apart. And this is a project that's been going for 60 years that was built on the idea that we never want to go to war with each other again. And over that 60 years, in that sense, it's been hugely successful. But this crisis has made people all across Europe question the idea of that union, hasn't it?
Well, this has been really delightful for people like Marine Le Pen, for Nigel Farage, who wrote a delighted op-ed today, I think, in The Telegraph, saying, well, look, this is what happened. We were right. I'm right. Europe is disaster. And it's true that if Europe works well when things are going well, what happens when things are disastrous? Britain has always been a little bit detached from all this, I think, perhaps because we haven't had communism or fascism on our shores. And certainly the way that Britain has been looking at this whole the whole debacle in Greece has been very interesting. We're just looking, it's also all very solipsistic, how it refers to us, how we are in relation to the European project. It's between the Euro battle between the Eurosceptics and anti-austerity groups here, rather than relating to what the implications for Europe as a whole. It doesn't bode well for our own referendum, which is due sometime in the next year or two.
Before we talk a little bit more about Europe, let's hear from Charlotte McDonald Gibson, who's Monocle's Brussels correspondent. She's going to give us the view from Brussels and her thoughts on whether a deal can be struck.
The European Union has its own special way of dealing with crises. It's called muddling through. Warnings of final deadlines pass, ultimatums are made and then politely ignored, and somehow splits between nations which once seemed unbridgeable are papered over. But this referendum has really thrown that approach into disarray. Rowing back on the bad blood of the last few months is looking increasingly difficult. At the same time, leaders are desperate to avoid a country leaving the single currency. Although the Eurozone is much more stable today than it was back at the start of the crisis in 2010, a chaotic Greek exit would dent investor confidence and economic contagion remains a concern. Secondly, the single currency is seen as a key pillar of the EU's post-war political union, so its partial breakup would be crushing for believers in Project Europe, and there are still many of them. And finally, no one knows how on earth a country would even leave the Eurozone. Simply dealing with the practicalities and legal ramifications would be an enormous headache. So my prediction, at least in the short term, is more muddling through as everyone comes back to the negotiating table and tries to fashion another deal. So we can brace ourselves for more late-night meetings, unbreakable deadlines and meaningless ultimatums while Greece hangs on by the fingernails.
That's our Brussels correspondent, Charlotte McDonald Gibson. Roger Boys, do you share Charlotte's analysis there that muddling through is how Europe's dealt with these crises in the past, and muddling through is how Europe's going to have to deal with it now?
Well, yes. I mean, in the short term, I guess that's probably going to be what happens, because otherwise we risk, you know, I mean, how much longer can capital controls continue, for example, in Greece? How much longer can we have that financial instability? That's obviously going to have to be patched up in some way. But in 2-3 months, we're going to be, European leaders are going to be asked for a third bailout, probably, of Greece. You know, there's nothing fundamentally changes in all this. I mean, the big pressure for a muddle-through solution at the moment is a debt that becomes repayable on July the 20th, a €3.5 billion a debt to the European Central Bank. And that's what's focusing minds, because fundamentally Greece has no collateral to support that. So it has to be a political decision to supply to continue with some kind of emergency liquidity for Greece, and to support it beyond July the 20th. But we're talking here in a very tight framework. The big problems, these unpayable debts, the years and years of austerity, even if we do austerity light, as the result of some massive grand bargain with Greece, is just not going to work. It's failed. It's failed. The European project has failed Greece, and Greece basically has to live with the fact that it should never have been a member of the Eurozone in the first place. And so no amount of muddling through will see Greece until through to the end of the year. It's we'll probably end up postponing this point, but it's I'm afraid that Greece will leave. And my main worry is that once... and it will leave in probably in the form of some kind of suspension. That's to say, it won't be expelled. There are no mechanisms for expelling it, but it will somehow be expelled. Suspended. And this suspension will drag on and will propel Greece into some kind of limbo. And that seems to me more dangerous than anything else.
And Daniela, the other thing that Charlotte raises there is this fear of contagion, that if Greece leaves... that then the markets will look at who, you know, the next country that's weakest. It might be Portugal, it might be Spain, it might be Italy. And what happens then?
Absolutely. And I think that's another reason why the fears of a precedent or even of a compromise solution, because if you reach a compromise with Greece and if you make enormous concessions, then what next? What next with Spain and Portugal and Italy? And what about internal politics of those countries? Maybe I wonder if people are worried about the left-wing resurgence and see this as a threat. I mean, there's a very binary way of looking at it. The poor, brave Greeks and the bullying, unfeeling European Union. I think that's certainly the left in Britain have reacted to it. This is the way that they're viewing it. And it's a little bit too. It's a little bit too broad and too simplistic a view.
But isn't there an argument that actually we're seeing the opposite argument being put forward, which is that the Greeks are all feckless and it's their own fault? They borrowed too much money, and they just need to pay it back. If they can't, well, tough.
Yeah, it's very binary and it's very divisive. It's either what that's the right are viewing it, I think, in that way. The left are viewing it as some sort of, it's a very emotional moment, plucky Greece being at the mercy of a supranational body. I'm no economist. Surely the reality lies somewhere between that.
Well, I'm glad you just said you're no economist, and surely the matter lies somewhere in between, because we have an economist who says exactly that. I listened earlier, Monocle's Henry Rhys Sheridan spoke with Jonathan Porters, an economist and a director of the National Institute of Economic and Social Research. They began by talking about how the International Monetary Fund allowed this to happen in the first place.
The original sin, as it were, of the current crisis is what happened in the summer of 2010 when the first Greek program was agreed. And at that point, what happened was that although the IMF and indeed any external economist who'd bothered to look at the numbers realized that what Greece really needed was a major write-down of its debt, the IMF agreed to go along with the Europeans and particularly Eurozone policymakers, and pretend that this wasn't really necessary and that somehow Greece would still be able to repay all its debts if the program went ahead. And of course, that program was based on hopelessly optimistic assumptions, as the IMF knew at the time. And so what really happened was that the IMF signed up to a program which it knew wasn't really in Greece's own interests because of pressure from its European shareholders, and in particular, of course, the current, the then managing director of the IMF, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who of course had his own domestic political ambitions. I think it was a very unfortunate episode in the history of the IMF, and it's really coloured everything that's happened since.
In your opinion, what now needs to be addressed most urgently, economically speaking?
Most urgent is simply to get the Greek banks open and get the Greek economy to some semblance of normality. And that means an early agreement between the institutions, the European Central Bank, the European Commission, the IMF, and the Greek government, at least on short-term measures to ensure that the banks reopen, which which means that the European Central Bank has to keep on providing them with liquidity as required, but also some sort of vision of a program which, unlike the past programs that the IMF and the ECB and the Commission have imposed on Greece, which the Greeks recognize as being reasonable and fair and likely to lead to some growth in the Greek economy.
And what do you think will actually happen?
Well, I think it's quite difficult to predict, and it may be 50-50 or 60-40. What I fear will happen is that those within the Eurozone who would quite like to get rid of Greece altogether, to make an example to people who stand up against them, as it were, will succeed in forcing the ECB to cut off the Greek banks and push the Greek economy over the edge. That is what some in Europe, in particular Wolfgang Schäuble, the finance minister in Germany, and some of his allies like Mr. Dusselboom from the Netherlands, would like to do. They want to make an example of Greece and show that anybody who pushes back against austerity gets what's coming to them. On the other side, there are more reasonable people, in particular leaders in France and Italy, who, while they're still exasperated by some of the antics of the Greek government, still recognize that it's in the interest not just of Greece but of Europe as a whole to come sort of an arrangement. And then similarly, it requires goodwill and good sense on the part of the Greek government, who have played, frankly, a very bad hand, but they played it very badly. And that's part just due to their inexperience and amateurism, but they really need to get their act together. So if the good guys win in the Eurozone and the Greek government gets its act together, there is still the possibility of a not a great outcome, but an okay outcome that gives some hope to the Greek people. Equally, there's still a very strong possibility that the hardliners within the Eurozone, who really should be chastened by the complete disaster that their strategy has led to so far, but sadly are not, that they will win and they will succeed in blowing the whole thing up.
That was Jonathan Porter's director of the National Institute of Economic and Social Research, talking to Monocle's Henry Rees-Sheridan. Roger Boys, as Jonathan said there, a number of economists realised in 2010 that there needed to be a major write-down of Greek debt. And, we saw similar things happen with countries and banks that needed to be bailed out. Why didn't it happen to Greece then?
Well, Jonathan explains it as an institutional thing. That's to say that the IMF bowed to its main European stakeholders. There is a kind of backdrop to that, which is domestic politics. And, the Christian Democrats had a very important regional election to fight in North Rhine-Westphalia. There was already quite a groundswell of resistance to bailing out Greece. It's difficult to underestimate how difficult it is in a populous quite poor and underinvested region like North Rhine-Westphalia, where manufacturing industry has collapsed. How irresponsible it seems that a country on the margins of their existence, where you spend 2 weeks' holiday a year, makes these kind of demands and kind of sacrifices.
But surely that's when you need leadership.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have it. They didn't have it. That was, I'm no fan of Angela Merkel. There's really, she's made a lot of, by her absence, has made a lot of things worse.
Well, so long as the people of North Rhine-Westphalia are fine, then I'm sure the rest of Europe will be happy. Daniela, as Jonathan also points out there, we need goodwill and good sense from the Greek government. And as you say, it has been quite binary, the way that people see it. If you're of a certain political viewpoint, you might think that Syriza are just crazy and who would even vote for them anyway? It's all nonsense. And if you're on the left, you'll get a lot of people saying they're heroes and actually ignoring the fact that they haven't really played their hand, which wasn't a great hand in the first place, very well at all, have they?
They haven't. It's not their fault that they're in this situation, but they could have handled things very, very differently in the last 6 months. As Roger says, they're completely inexperienced. I think they've played up very much to the whole the idea of national pride and national dignity, which might be very sexy, but I think in national interests, compromise is probably a more beneficial path to take. The question is, as well, are they going for what's best for the country, or what's best for them to survive as a political grouping? Critics will say that they've been very, very self-interested. The problem remains: are they going to be able to remake the cabinet? Are they going to make a better bargaining base? Although, as we've discussed, I don't think that their counterparts are in any mood right now for going back to the deal that was on the table previously, which no longer is, and making that more advantageous.
At least the new finance minister is called Euclid, so, you know, one hopes
that... Inspires confidence.
And thanks a lot, Lotus, I think, wasn't it? Something like that.
Zakalotos.
And he went to St. Paul's, like George Osborne.
It's Zakalotos, so that's...
Oh, that's it, good.
Is a bit different from thanks a Lotus. But but anyway, sorry, Roger, you
Yes, no, I just wanted to say, because Daniela just sort of prodded something in my memory. One of the problems has been and the Greeks maybe rightly suspect that in the last 3 or 4 weeks of negotiation, the agenda has actually been regime change. That's to say, the creditors just couldn't stick the tone of Syriza, its brinkmanship, and were really quite determined to get rid of it. And that's why the result on Sunday was really quite a big shock, because it assumed that it was addressing a lot of like-minded Greeks, and it turns out they weren't.
You know? Well, also, I mean, you know, European leaders are usually very, very careful at not interfering in other elections. Mm. And yet here you had Juncker speaking out in favour of a yes vote. You had all sorts of German political figures speaking out in favour of a yes vote. As you mentioned before, the fact that all the main political parties seem to have come out behind Tsipras today, do you think that will change the way Europe deals with Greece now, because they won't be trying to essentially sort of play one political party off against others?
Well, my bet is no. I mean, my bet is that if there was indeed a project to get rid of the Tsipras government, that's now just simply being postponed. It's in the nature of this Syriza, which is not really so much a party as a kind of coalition of different people, and that they do have a lot of them hard left. And they do have this kind of Trotskyist ethos of permanent crisis. They basically thrive on this permanent crisis. So it becomes very difficult to strike deals with a group like this that's constantly contradicting itself internally. You know, they're quite artful in a kind of guerrilla partisan warfare kind of way. If you look at the way that referendum question was phrased, it was basically you have a choice between do you want to stay in the Eurozone and reject this bailout program, or do you want to stay in the Eurozone and surrender to everything that Europe wants from you? You know, and under those circumstances, frankly, I would have voted no as well, because it was they made the referendum about subservience. They basically said, you know, do you want to be the slave of Brussels or not? You know, and that's how they're playing it. Well, wait, hang on. And so my assumption is, on no evidence whatsoever, but on my assumption is that the Eurozone elites are now going to give it another 2 months, and then we'll try and get rid of Syriza.
But Daniela, very briefly before the end, that sense amongst Greek voters that, you know, however much we've lost, what we do still have is our dignity. We don't want to be pushed around by you Europeans. That proved incredibly powerful.
I don't think this is the last time it will prove incredibly powerful. I think that they're leaving economics aside. This is all tied up in emotion and ideas of giving up your national sovereignty. In Britain, this is going to be a major issue. I don't think I've heard any very convincing economic arguments for leaving Europe. The arguments have all been based on national pride, national pride, national pride.
on that note, we'll leave it. Daniela Pellad and Roger Boys, thank you very much indeed. That's all we have time for on today's Midori House. It was produced by Carlotta Ribello, researched by Henry Rees-Sheridan, Elena Nikolacheva and Mariana Zuniga. The studio manager was Toby Hammond. We'll be in Istanbul next with Chris Lord. Then it's Culture with Rob Bound at 1900 hours. We're back same time tomorrow. My name is Steve Bloomfield. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.